It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. It's always a good day when I get to step out in my little studio. Although I did have to boot my puppy out of here. She was here with me earlier and being such a good girl while I was doing some writing. And of course, I had my favorite soundtrack playing. So she's very peaceful down at my feet. But it's a little later in the day and she's getting restless. So I had to boot her out and she's now hanging out with my husband in his office. But that will make for an easier interview for me because sometimes I'm like, oh, what do I do? Stop chewing on that bone so loudly. I'm so happy to introduce Elizabeth Copeland. Elizabeth is the writer and founder of griefdialogues.com. Also, she's involved with healthcare education for professionals. And I love that the expression and the muse and everything that she is doing around grief is through theater and music and expressive storytelling. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome her to the show, and we're going to find out all about what she's doing with Grief Dialogues. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you so much, Jane. Really appreciate this.
Well, I'm so glad you could come on. Elizabeth, it's such a cool story. Like, I was looking through your website, and, you know, your motto is, out of grief comes art. Where and how did the concept start about Grief Dialogues?
Well, actually, it came out of the fact that in a particular year, a number of years ago now, the year was 2014, I experienced three different deaths with people I care very much about, various scenarios around their deaths. And I wanted to talk about my feelings, about my grief, or actually, in the case of the death of my cousin, I wanted to talk about her actual death. And nobody wanted to talk to me. It was almost as if I talked about death, it was some sort of a contagious disease. And so, being the theater lover that I am, I decided to write a short play about my experience, and she, and not just about, actually, the play was sort of a composite of the three losses that I had experienced that year, and I really just wrote it for myself, but when I happened to show it to some theater friends, they said, this is really good. You should submit this to some theater contests, some play festivals, so I did, and I started winning.
Wow.
And I had performances not only in Seattle, but also on Bainbridge Island, which is where I live in Washington State, and also in Sedona, Arizona. And I received a 6-week run in Los Angeles for my play, Hospice, a Love Story. And what I found was that if audience members knew that the playwright was in the audience, they would often come up to me afterwards and they would say, oh, that was a great play. You know, that happened to me when my mother died, or, gee, I wish my brother and I could have communicated in such a way. And then they would launch into their own personal stories of death, dying, and grief. And I realized that I had created something, not that in and of itself was all that powerful, but the power it had was to allow other people to share their stories. Mm. And so from that, I contacted 5 other playwrights that I knew, and we put a collection of 6 short plays together, various scenarios of dying, death, and or grief. And that became the play Grief Dialogues. And we started those performances with talkbacks after the show. And what we experienced there was also quite encouraging, because we would do the performance and we'd even say, well, actually, I started the talkbacks because the full performance with the 6 short plays ran about 1 hour and 10 minutes. And I just, you know, a healthy one act, long one act. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to get up on the stage afterwards and say, well, that was our show for tonight, folks, you know. drive safely home, because the last, particularly the last play, was quite emotional. And so I started saying, you know, you're more than welcome to leave, or we're going to take a little break, like an intermission, and then we're going to have a talk back. And I would bring in various experts in the field of end of life or hospice or that sort of thing, social work. And what we found was about 75% of the audience stayed, which I have done theater. That is an unheard percentage of people stay for talkbacks.
Right.
And that's when we really began to realize that it was out of this art form, that we were able to get people to open up. But the art form came out of the grief that we were all feeling and expressing through theater. And then I started looking around at paintings and music. A woman who's actually a playwright, she happened to contact me. She'd written a song for a well-known Canadian artist named Amy Skye, and it was called Go On. And it was actually a song written to help a friend of hers with the death of her friend's father. And again, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, out of grief comes this art. And it's just everywhere now. I notice it. And so we've been very fortunate to find, in fact, coming up this month in April, it's National Poetry Month in the United States. And I have had a huge surge of incredible poems sent to us. And we're going to be posting some of those on our website, some of the poems that we have received. And additionally, we're going to have some articles about how poetry really is transformative, not just for the writer or for the reader, but how poetry is now being used by healthcare professionals.
Wow.
So, you know, there's just art and being able to spin art from the depths of grief is really, at least speaking for myself, the way that the healing process begins. I'm not going to say that I'm completely healed because of it, because I'm not, but it certainly began a lifelong healing process that's been incredible.
It's rather brilliant. And it's really kind of beautiful too, because you didn't chase after this. You didn't try to manufacture anything. You just leaned into something because you could feel that there was the proper energy behind it. So I think it's beautiful.
Exactly.
Great way right. to express it. And, you know, a good friend of mine, we just chatted yesterday, and he was telling me about another friend who had just lost her mother, and she was devastated. And he was calling to ask for my advice, like, what would you recommend? And I said, you know what? The best thing you can do is just show up and ask that person to tell you a story, or to share one of their favorite recipes, or, you know, something that they loved about that person. And that's the thing that people a lot of times shy away from. Like, I don't know what to say to that person because they just lost this incredibly important person in their life. But if we are just to reach out and say, talk to me, which is what you're doing. You're doing this through your art. It's really great.
Right. And that's suggesting that someone share a story about that person, using that person's name. You know, if the person lost their mother and the mother's name was Amanda, saying, tell me one of your favorite stories about your mother, Amanda.
Right.
And it's also very powerful just using their name. That's really strong. If you have a story of your own about the person who died, I remember when my father died, one of his friends came up and told me a story I had never heard of before, a wonderful story about how my dad had helped him. In a small way, you know, it didn't necessarily save his life, but it was so important for me to hear that at that time. It was just a beautiful story. And I also recommend people, if they have a story to share, do that.
I love that. Now, why do you think, Elizabeth, if you just tuned in, Elizabeth Copeland's my guest today. She's writer and founder of griefdialogues.com, which I encourage you to go there. You can go to the blog. You can read up on this just fascinating, really plugged in, beautiful organization that's giving us, I guess, coping skills. What do you think, why are we so buttoned down in the United States? I mean, you know, over what, a couple million people each year just in the U.S. alone die, right? We're all going to die. It's a destination no one can avoid. Why don't we talk about it? Why are we so uncomfortable about death?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'll give you my opinion, which I think is kind of a mid-20th century on opinion, which is, you know, death was pretty open up until about World War II, I'm going to say, when it just seemed like it was so prevalent and so heavy that by the 50s, people really didn't want to talk about death because it was just so heavy. You know, and then and senseless in some ways because of the war and wars.
Sure.
Because Korea followed shortly and Vietnam. So my father was in Korea and Vietnam. Anyway, so that was occurring. And then I think the other thing that started happening was medical advancements. And all of a sudden, doctors became people who were going to heal you. It was going to cure. And going to a doctor meant they were going to fix you. And the doctor began thinking, that's my job, to heal. To the point where I think by the time we were looking at the 60s and 70s and the beginning of the 80s, it was about how do we stop death? Not how do we create a comfortable death? Because like you said, everybody's going to die. All of a sudden, it's like, well, this person shouldn't die because now we have new medicine. We have new machines. We have new this. We have new that. We can keep that person alive for another 10 years.
Interesting.
You know, to heck what the quality of life might be. You know? I remember a doctor friend of mine, when I was living in California, once said that he was able to help a woman with cancer get 5 more good years out of her life. And then she died from suicide.
Wow.
And how that made him feel. He had treated the body, but not the mind.
Wow.
And I think that is probably, now that you mentioned, I hadn't really thought about this in a long time, but that might have been one of my earliest memories of you know, what we do to our bodies through our minds and not embracing the fact that, you know what, we are going to die. And no, we don't want to hasten it. And a lot of times there are people who die way too young, or a lot of times people die in the most horrific manner. And that is not good. I don't mean to say that form of death is good. But sometimes you reach a point where it's okay to let go. And I think there's a society right now, we don't embrace that. We want people to live at all costs.
Yeah.
And our medical community has been sort of shepherded into thinking that if your patient dies, you failed. Yeah. And I even, my in-laws, they were in their 90s when they died, but I do remember my father-in-law, I think he was about 89, he told me once with a straight face that if he died, it was because his doctor made a mistake.
Really?
Yeah, not when he died, but if he died.
Wow.
And that was another, you know, there were all these little things that sort of happened between 2014 and now 2021 that also kind of said to me, hey, we got to talk about this thing, death, and we have to share grief. Mm-hmm. And in that we share art and we share life. So that's all grief dialogues kind of mushroomed out of all this in hopes of giving beauty. Because we don't know. I can walk out right now, being in the jungle of Costa Rica, I could walk outside and get hit by a wayward cattle, you know, cow.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I'm going to get hit by a car because there aren't any, but I could get hit by a cow, right? So and that would be it. And,
right.
You know, would it be sad that I died at 67, almost 67? Yeah, because I had a lot more life left. But did I live a life that I enjoyed because of beauty and art and loved ones and people I cared about and people cared about me? Yeah, I did. So.
Yeah. And
sad to see me go. But.
Yeah, but truly one hilarious play if you think about it.
Oh, you know it.
I love it. I just have such a great visual. Let's just cancel on that ever happening. But oh my goodness, what a great death story. To live a good life and to die a good death. In my opinion, it wouldn't get much better, right? You live right. until you, you know, you physically are ready to go. And if you're right. so blessed, you live a nice, long, healthy life. Not that all exactly. of us can do that. And of course, with this virus, you know, this past year has been such a challenge. And talk about grief. There's so much on top of just your basic everyday grieving over different circumstances. There's been a lot of grief over life as we used to know it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on the death front there, I just had a statistic that's quite sobering. And in 2020 in the United States, there were, I believe, according to the CDC, 3.6 million deaths, which is considerably more than the average year.
Right.
By about a million people total. Not just from COVID, but you know, there are a lot of other deaths as well. But there's also a statistic that says for every death, there are, generally speaking, on average, 12 mourners. So if you multiply that out, in 2020 alone, there are close to like 45 million Americans who are suffering some sort of grief from the loss of a loved one. Mm. That's a lot of people out there who need some love, some art, some understanding, mm-hmm. some ways to begin the healing process.
Coping.
Some ways to coping, yep. process the loss.
Yep.
So that's why we do what we do, in the hopes that our little bit of art, theater, music can help others that are going through this very difficult time for all involved.
Well, that brings me to another great question then. The death and grief dialogue that you have. If somebody's listening today and they have a story for you, how did they do that? Can they actually submit?
Absolutely. They can. If they go to the website, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a submit your story button, and you just send it. We have all kinds of essays that are already on the site, so you can see, and we have a wide range. And as I mentioned, we're also taking some poetry right now as well. I also want to put a plug in for people if they have short plays, like 10 pages, 10, 11 pages.
Okay.
Because I'm getting ready to start looking at some of the new. I've been writing all our newest plays. We have a library of about 15 plays. A couple of them, three or four of them, have been written by other people that we continue to perform. But I've been writing the rest. And I am actually looking for other viewpoints. So if people have short plays they'd like to submit to us, just do it in the same submit your story form that you see there on the website, and we'll get right back to you as well. We don't take everything, you know, we take what yeah. we think will be, you know, we're looking for maybe a take on dying, death, and or grief that we haven't already talked about. So it helps people to kind of look at some of the things we've been publishing this past year. But yes, they can definitely please submit it. Please.
I love that. That's excellent. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely put the link in for that as well. So on the website, thegriefdialogues.com, Elizabeth, I saw the healthcare education for professionals. Let's talk about that. What is that?
Well, we've actually taken some of the plays that I wrote that were performed before the public, and we've adapted them now so that we perform them for healthcare providers. For example, Virginia Mason Hospital in Seattle, we did a program a year ago last February, just before everything was shut down. And the idea is theater is such a slice of life, and in my mind, by sitting in the audience watching a theatrical performance, it's like you're walking in those people's shoes, mm-hmm. right? And so, there's studies that show that theater creates an empathetic response that film doesn't, that reading doesn't necessarily. You can be sympathetic watching a film or sympathetic reading a book, but there's just something very visceral about watching something unfold live, right? So we have actually taken some of those plays and worked them I've written some plays specifically for healthcare providers. And so we do these performances and then they're facilitated with discussion on compassion and what the patient might be feeling and what the doctor might be feeling. I have one play called Death Doctor that is actually takes a doctor from residency to middle age and the various experiences that doctor has with death of his and some of his patients. So we try to get a dialogue going around the discussion, your dialogue going after the performance with the healthcare providers so that they can kind of open up about some of their feelings and also see what some of their patients might be going through. So that's where we've turned, and we had a number of other healthcare organizations that were planning to join in this. And of course with COVID that all changed, but we've now moved some of those plays to Zoom.
Oh,
and
cool.
With the advent of telehealth, some of those plays now are on Zoom, and they actually do mimic what is actually happening in telehealth right now. So what we thought was going to be like the death knell, live theater, as far as Greek dialogues was concerned, no pun intended,
sure.
has actually turned around to be, oh my gosh, this is how I have to talk to my patients now anyway. And now I see the story unfold. And now I'm understanding a little bit better. Or like we've got this one show called Honoring Choices that's going to be performed by Honoring Choices Pacific Northwest in April, three performances, and one in Spanish, by the way, and this is a play I wrote. And it's about advanced care directives. And it's the story of one older man, terminal diagnosis, and his daughter's and his doctor's attempt to get him to prepare by writing an advanced care directive. And it's kind of funny, you know. It's not meant to be a cautionary tale. It's meant to start a conversation. So this play will be performed, and then it will be followed up with conversations about how one does prepare an advanced care plan.
But it's
a fun story.
Very cool. I love that. And God bless our technology these days. What would we do? I mean, I wouldn't be able to see my family's faces other than for the love of FaceTime and Zoom and connecting with friends. And we've been very, you know, at the same time, the thing that we curse sometimes, which is technology, it really helped get us through a very difficult and challenging year.
It has, and it can be exhausting, but one person described Zoom as the intimacy of face. And ever since I heard that, now I really watch the faces of the people I'm talking with on Zoom.
Interesting.
And you don't get the body language anymore because it's really the face, but actually now you get their eyes. It's a new way of looking somebody in the eye that I think is very powerful.
I guess you haven't Zoomed with me because I'm all about the hand motions on Zoom.
Oh,
it's impossible for me and I'm not Italian, but it's impossible for me to speak without expressing myself with my hands. I don't know what the deal is. So I love on your website, you have, after decades of experience, I arrived at the following beliefs. And I love this one. Grief never ends. It changes. It's a journey, not a destination, nor a single event. That's so key for people to hear.
It's what keeps me going. You know, I lost my dad in 96, my mom in 2001. And some days it's as if it was yesterday.
Right.
And some days it's as if it was 50 years ago. And that's just the way it is, you know. And there are things that I do now, like right now, actually, I'll look in my mirror because I'm now 2 years older than my dad was when he died. And now I look in the mirror and I go, oh, my gosh, Dad, there you are.
Wow.
So it changes.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that you would take the time. I didn't mention at the beginning that Elizabeth and I were connected through the Beautiful Dying Expo, which I know that my audience hears about all the time because it's just been such a remarkable organization. And I'm just so honored to be part of it. And Michelle was like, oh, you're going to love Elizabeth, which I do. So,
same here. Thank you so much. Yes, I love Beautiful Dying Expo. We did two shows for them last November when it was virtual and hope to be back this year as well.
Good.
With some new shows.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, I just had, I'm having Michelle on the show too, and it's really, really coming along. So Elizabeth Copeland, founder and writer, griefdialogues.com. I do want to ask you, because it's one of my favorite questions, What do you dream or hope or possibly intuitively know is in the next room once we do leave our earthly vessel behind?
You know, that's funny because I did give that quite some thought, knowing you and knowing that I'd be talking to you. And I have to say that right now I am so in the moment and so taking advantage of and realizing my presence in the moment, and this is all I have, that it's not that I don't want to know what's in the next room or that I don't know what's in the next room, but I haven't gone there yet. I'm just here and now. And for me, that's centering. And I'm sure there's something else out there. I don't know what it is, but right now I'm standing on my back deck and I'm looking at all the palm trees, and any minute now the howler monkeys will start swinging and the flowers are blooming and the butterflies are going crazy.
Oh, beautiful.
This is what I think. So
I like it.
I'll be ready for the next room when it's time, but for now, I'm enjoying the gentle breeze of a very warm day in Costa Rica.
Well, I love that. Great, you know, and a really nice, unique answer. I haven't had that one before. And it sounds to me like your next room is be here now. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm all about present mindful awareness.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Any final thoughts before we wrap up for today?
You know, I'm just going to say one thing. My daughter-in-law sent me a cartoon recently, and I realized that this is also kind of my thought. And she sent it to me with love. But I realized, and she realized this about me as well, that I don't want to be dead when I die. And that's another reason why I'm kind of have a seize the day sort of mentality.
Yeah.
So, I just want to say thank you for having me on your show. I love hearing. I mean, anytime we can give voice to dying, death, and grief, which is inevitable, you know, grief is love. You know, you don't grieve somebody if you didn't love them, right?
Amen.
So anytime we can give voice to that, I just really applaud you for doing that as regularly as you do. Really, what a gift you're giving all of us. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I just want to close with this quote because it makes me laugh. I don't want to be dead when I die. That's fabulous. Elizabeth Copeland is my guest today on The Next Room. Thank you so much. I will post all of the links. And like you heard this beautiful lady tell you, if you have a short play, 10 to 11 pages, poetry, they accept all kinds of submissions, is, you know, and they go through them and they'll take what they can use. And they're looking for new perspectives, too. So if you have that creative gene and you're so inclined, please head to griefdialogues.com. Thanks again for tuning in to The Next Room. I'll catch you next Monday.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.